So watch what you say. Okay. A good Arab Shabbos, Parshas Chukas. It is Thursday evening to be exact. It is June 17th, so it is my parents' anniversary is in 2 days. So it is June 19th, not June 20th, but a good day nonetheless. A Tale of Two Michaels. He was the best of all time and the worst of all time. As Chicagoans, all of us know full well who the GOAT is. And no, I'm not talking about the infamous Billy Goat of Chicago Cubs lore. Bad excuse. Nor am I talking about the rabbi with the scraggly beard who resembles a goat. I'm referring to the GOAT, the greatest of all time. The greatest basketball player, if not the greatest athlete of all time, is unquestionably Michael Jordan. We don't need to list his accolades, awards, achievements, and accomplishments, but it feels good to, so why not? 14-time NBA All-Star, 5-time NBA Most Valuable Player, Rookie of the Year, 10-time NBA Scoring Champion, 2-time NBA Slam Dunk Champion, has the highest point per game average in NBA history, and many, many more. And most importantly, beyond his personal achievements, he led his team to 2 three-peats, winning 6 NBA championships, and in the process, earning 6 NBA final MVPs. There are many players in NBA history with incredible personal statistics. Will Chamberlain, for example. And there are many players with incredible team statistics. Bill Russell, for example. But no player so clearly combined the two, personal success with team success, like Michael Jordan. He was a leader who led his team and taught his teammates season after season what it took to win. And winning was exactly what they did. Michael Jordan, the player, was without any exaggeration or hyperbole, the best of the best. And yet, while all of this is true for Michael Jordan, the player, Michael Jordan, the team owner, is almost the exact opposite. As majority owner of the Charlotte Hornets and chief executive of basketball decisions for the past 15 seasons, Michael Jordan has led a team that has lost almost 60% of the games over that tenure. They've only made the playoff 3 times in 15 years. This is the 3rd worst among all NBA teams over that same span. And in a league where more than half the teams make the playoffs every season, that stat is atrocious. And they have never, not once, ever won a playoff series under his leadership. They have made dreadful draft picks, freakishly foolish free agent signings, while being completely incapable of signing the right players or hiring the right head coach. Michael Jordan, the player, who once said he would never play for anyone other than Phil Jackson, because he recognized perhaps more than anyone else just how great a coach Phil was, has continuously hired coaches who seemingly have no clue what they are doing. And after digesting all this information, all these cold, hard facts, we can't help but wonder, how is it that Michael Jordan, a man who demonstrates such an incredible basketball IQ and leading and helping orchestrate over a decade of basketball dominance as a player, has shown the exact opposite in his years as an owner and executive? We have all read and listened to this Parsha, Parshas Chukas, dozens of times in our lives. Yet no matter how many times I have read it, me personally, there is one section I have never been able to make sense of. We all know that Moses sins in the incident of the hitting of the rock, and therefore he is punished and doesn't merit bringing the Jewish people into the land of Israel. And as much as it is difficult and troubling to understand what exactly the crime was and why the punishment fit the sin, At least we recognize that there was a crime. There was, in fact, a sin, whatever it may have been, that was perpetrated. However, in our parsha, God tells us that it isn't only Moshe who is punished for hitting the rock. Rather, Aaron HaKohen, Moshe's brother, is punished as well. In Parak Chaf, Pasuk Chavdalah, chapter 20, verse 24, the Torah tells us, and God says, Yasef Aharon Elamav, Ki lo yavo la'aretz asher nesati libnei Yisrael, al asher merisem es pi l'mei meriva. Aaron too will die here on Mount Hor and will not merit to enter the land of Israel because he too sinned at the incident of the rock. And I'll be honest, when I first read that pasuk late one evening, a little while back, I was positively perplexed because I was pretty confident that Aaron never committed any sin. I didn't recall him doing anything wrong. However, to be honest, since it was late at night, and I was a little distracted by the aroma of my Bigelow peppermint tea, one of my go-tos, I decided to go back and read the Parsha again. Perhaps there was something I missed. So there I was, sitting in my chair, sipping my decaffeinated herbal mint tea, trying to make sense of these psukim. And I read the psukim again and again. All the verses describing the incident at the rock, to see if there was any inkling at all, any hint, as to what Aaron's sin may have been. And after reading through it again, I found nothing. No mention, no allusion, no clue as to any sin of Aaron. And yet there was God proclaiming loudly that Aaron had sinned. Aaron had done something wrong. But there's nothing there. Nothing seemed to make sense. So I read it again, and again, and again, searching for anything, a crumb, a trail. Yet the only thing that became clear to me was there was nothing there in regards to Aaron. Moshe was the one who was told to speak to the rock and provide water for the Jews. Moshe was the one who hit the rock. Moshe was the one who got upset and berated Bnei Yisrael, the Jewish people. Aaron never said or did anything. Why was he being punished? He didn't do anything. Isn't God just? Isn't God fair? And then all of a sudden, it hit me like a ton of bricks. Perhaps that was exactly the point. Aaron didn't say or do anything. A few years ago, I saw a fascinating interview with Sir Charles Barkley, a longtime friend of Michael Jordan. In that interview, Charles Barkley was asked, why does he think it, or what does he think the reason is, that Michael Jordan has been such a failure as an owner and team executive? And Barkley gave an answer that was so insightful and thought-provoking. He said as follows, Michael Jordan the player was still just a player. As great as he was, as much influence and clout that he had, he still had to answer to his teammates, such as Scottie Pippen, his coach, Phil Jackson, his general manager, Jerry Krause, and team owner, Jerry Reinsdorf. And any idea that he had, be it good or bad, was always examined, analyzed, and criticized by those around him. However, Michael Jordan, the owner, has surrounded himself, whether intentional or not, with people who are too in awe of him, too scared to say anything negative or critical to him. His decisions are never questioned, never analyzed. What he says goes. That's it. Michael Jordan is the basketball god. And that has been his greatest downfall. Because great people, even someone as great as Michael Jordan, need honest, open feedback to actually be great, to actually be successful. After Bnei Yisrael come to Moshe to ask for water, God specifically tells Aaron, to go with Moshe when he gives the water to Bnei Israel, to the Jewish people. And the Medrash here adds a critical chronological detail that we may have forgotten. Moshe and Aaron, in that moment, were sitting Shiva for their sister, Miriam, who had just passed away. They were in the middle of mourning their beloved sister. And God knew that at this juncture, at this moment, when Moshe was in a state of deep grief, there was a serious risk that Moshe wasn't going to be able to keep it together, dealing with the unruly and sometimes kvetchy Jewish people. So God tells Aaron, go with. I want you to be a calming presence. Stand by Moshe's side. And if, for whatever reason, Moshe starts to lose it, you need to say something, to jump in, to calm him down. Moshe, Targia, calm down. And just as was expected, as the Jewish people seemingly unnecessarily egg Moshe on, Moshe starts to lose it. He starts to lose control, and he's about ready to yell at them, to lambast them for their lack of respect, for their insolence. And now was Aaron's chance to jump in, to tell Moshe to take a deep breath before he says or does anything that he will regret. And yet Aaron freezes up. In the moment, Aaron stands there silently. He says and does nothing, while Moshe, his brother, his Rebbe, his teacher, gets upset, smacks the rock, and scolds the Jewish people. Moshe lost control, and Aaron said nothing. We don't know why Aaron was silent. The Torah doesn't give us any details. He may have been scared as to how Moshe was going to react. He may have thought it wasn't his place to say anything. But the bottom line is that he should have spoken up. He should have said something. And he didn't. There's a song that came out a few years ago. The name of the song is Say Something. One of the lyrics from that song is something that I think about whenever I read this parsha. And the line goes as follows. I'll sing it. Say something, I'm giving up on you. Say something, I'm giving up on you. And in my mind, when I read this narrative from this parsha, I can almost hear God's voice coming down from the heavens, begging Aaron, say something to Moshe. Say something, I'm giving up on you. Yet Aaron says nothing. And this challenge of finding our voice, of speaking up, of knowing when to say something, isn't unique to Aaron. It's something all of us, each and every one of us, struggle with in certain areas and times of our lives. Be it with family, their loved ones, our spouses, our friends, our colleagues, co-workers, and beyond. Sometimes we know and we deeply desire to say something, whether it's words of encouragement, words of love, words of criticism. And for some reason, we find the words getting caught in our throat. We lack the courage, the confidence to speak up. And yet this exactly is the call of our Torah portion. This is the call of Judaism, and this is the call of God. Even if it's difficult, even if it's uncomfortable, is up to us find the courage to say something. I wish everyone a good Shabbos and everyone the courage and the confidence to say something.